All right, everyone. Welcome once again to Free For All right here on a Thursday night. As always, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific is when we're streaming live. I am your host, Big John, who is feeling kind of old and tired, but that's why you bring in the youth. You got to keep the youth involved to energize. So I don't know if people think my co-host is young or not, but he's young compared to me, and we love him. Mr. Hody Johns. Hodster, how you doing tonight?
I feel a lot better now getting called young and youthful. That's something when you go bald in elementary school, it's not something you have the pleasure of being called often. You know, if I were a drinker, you know, I probably would have been able to get away with it at about 12 years old. So I'm just happy to have found a place where I can at least pretend to be young compared to everybody else. And politics is actually a pretty good venue for that, as we've seen.
So. It really is. And let's think of you not as having misfortune. Let's think of you as the next Patrick Stewart, perhaps. I think he went bald at like 20. So it's one of those things that he always thought it hurt his career. But then obviously we know he ended up Sir Patrick Stewart of Star Trek fame and X-Men fame, I guess. But before we get started, everyone, you're watching Free For All right here at Grumblings Media. Always check out past Free For All episodes. Go to our YouTube channel or Rumble channel, or go to our website, grumblingsmedia.com. All the shows are archived there. Do us a favor. Help us out. Smash that like button. Smash the follow button. Hey, man, it doesn't cost you anything other than a couple of clicks. Why not help a couple of brothers out here, help Free For All grow within the libertarian community and elsewhere? I and Hody would greatly appreciate that. All right, Hody, let's sort of get right to it. We're going to talk about – we wanted to talk about this last week, but it has such a great time dealing with the internal LP stuff that we – you know, we went over 2 hours. We still didn't get time to do it, so I don't want to miss it. So let's talk about the situation to kick off the evening. Let's talk about the situation in L.A. Of course, you know, you had the big ICE riots there. You had escalation, militarization, some people would say, of the National Guard. President Trump definitely trying to look tough in that situation, trying to get, you know, put his foot down, so to speak, and execute on his campaign promise to get rid of all the illegals, all 18, 20 million of them, whatever it is. Hody, tell me, the scenes out of L.A., they've got to be a little bit disturbing. It is to me. I'm thinking to you as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's ugly, and it's what we can expect to have happen when you take a course of action where you are not busting up drug dens anymore. You are not busting up criminals. In fact, ICE themselves released a statement in the New York Times that said they're having to let criminal illegal immigrants go just to meet up with Trump's demands to get illegal immigrants out. And so because they have that quota, well, it's far easier to bust an illegal immigrant that isn't trying to hide, that isn't, you know, ashamed or anything like that. So what happened in LA is really kind of expected. When you bust up an elementary school graduation, when you get a grandmother in the hospital, when you get a pastor's wife of like 30 plus years in this nation, when these people have no criminal records and right. You've made it a point to target them at the expense from at the expense of, you know, the ones that have committed sexual assaults, murders, drug dealing, gang membership, right? They are no longer doing that. They are blatantly profiling because, again, when you've got that quota, you've got to fulfill it. And so they're busting people just literally for looking like that. We have some people from Afghanistan who they found a picture where they were next to somebody who had tattoos and busted them. So what's happening in LA is what would happen almost anywhere else. ICE has overstepped their bounds. They are busting people. This is a good way to radicalize not just like far leftists and social libertarians like ourselves. Well, it's kind of actually more an economic issue, but that's a whole philosophical debate for later. But it's really radicalizing even moderate right wingers. And we've seen that in the town halls and everything, that it's like I was expecting, even though, as you mentioned, Trump did promise that he would do this. They just I think assumed he was lying, but that he's only going to deport like really bad people.
Yeah.
Deporting like really good people that you've known for a long time and your church members. And when they're doing it at the hospital, it's just so egregious. And so the backlash is expected.
Yeah. And listen, during the campaign, I think you, me, and just about every reasonable person said, look, hopefully this is just campaign rhetoric, because in order to extradite 18, 15, 20 million, whatever the final number is, people, you're talking about what, 7%, 5% of the population? The only way to do that is by activating the military. You're not going to get your local PD. You're not going to deputize enough ICE agents to, by themselves, forcibly remove all those people. So we knew this was coming. You and I said this is coming. A lot of libertarians said this was coming, except for the ones that are, of course, pro-MAGA, were pro-MAGA, right? That this has got to lead to the activation of the military. And the way things are, you could almost tell, like, this was very predictable, as you said. You're going to have skirmishes. You're going to have little, you know, you're going to see Kent State all over again. You're going to see this sort of thing, which Americans, to our credit in our history, have rarely seen, which is using the Army as a police force, using the Marines as a police force. And in L.A., we saw that. Rioting. Fires, assaulting ICE agents, police officers, soldiers, National Guardsmen. Now, Hody, I don't know about you. I assume I know about you, though. We're not down with the violence, right? Especially if it can be avoided. It's one thing if you said, hey, man, self-defense. But in this particular case, while I fully put blame on the Trump administration, I fully put blame on those who, like all these right-wing pundits, paid agitators, the cat turds, the Benny Johnsons, the who's the other one? DC Drano, Insurrection Barbie, all these like honestly just grifting malcontents. When you saw them and they're happy, you know, they see a scene like that and they're like, every last one, get every last one out. And they get cheered by a certain percentage of Trump supporters. That's just bad news, man. You know something tragic is going to happen. It happened often, unfortunately, right? So let me ask you this. And I assume there's some sort of organization to the riots in L.A., right? Let's not be naive. I'm sure there's some sort of organization. I'm not even saying malevolent, but there's an organization to these riots. They're not spontaneous. Do you think it was a wise move to react in the way you did, in the way they did, rather, which is the looting, the setting on fire, the physical confrontations with police and guardsmen? Like, just from effectiveness point of view, but also from a PR point of view.
I mean, I've always been a big supporter of peaceful protest. And as soon as you've got targets that are not your primary target, you lose a lot of your good value that you might have brought to things. That all of a sudden, you can't claim to just be like, oh, I just love people so much and that's why I'm doing this. Well, if you love people so much, why are you robbing their stores? If it's purely about not material gain, why did you rob an Apple store, right? Like, this is really stupid stuff when people do that kind of thing. Now, I will say this. We have to be careful not to collectivize, because there is bad behavior in every party. Like, when people say the libertarians are racist, I get where they get that. I get where it's coming from, right? So when we say the rioters are violent, I get where it's coming from. That said, are the vast majority of them violent? No. Now, you could point to the streets and be like, but look at all these burned cars and everything like that. And it's like, how many – okay, if you're putting together a puzzle, Big John, right, how many people would it take – if one person is there to undo every piece, that's their only job. How many people putting together the puzzle would you need to complete that puzzle? Estimation.
I don't know.
Maybe 100? 1,000?
Okay.
Right? Like, I mean, how easy is it to take apart a puzzle, right? So we really – it doesn't take bad behavior on the part of too many officials. Something I will remind the right wing of, because I think this is important for them, is during the Tea Parties, we had a DNC operative literally get caught on camera. I don't know if it's paid, right, but basically had a protester infiltrate the Tea Party with like a racist Dora, like deport her sign or whatever, right?
Right. And I sort of remember that, yeah.
Right. And the guy ended up, they followed him and he ended up meeting with a DNC operative. Now you could just say like, no, look at the racist signs from this or whatever. Well, are you going to go with the regime and like their intentional destruction of a movement? Or are we going to look at like the actual movement itself? And those are two different things. You know, when people criticize Black Lives Matter, was it the people or the organization? Because those were two very different things. Like the Marxists, right, who got totally loaded off of Black Lives Matter is very different than the backlash that we saw at the ground level. So, you know, we do have to be careful not to collectivize. But that said, one of the things that Martin Luther King Jr., there are people who have made sure that they've had not one bad actor. The Tea Party actually is a pretty good example of this. The fact that we found like the one person who held up a racist sign. Martin Luther King Jr., really good at this. Didn't just tell you what to protest. Almost all of us know what to protest, but how to protest. How do we react when we are confronted with these different things? And how do we get that high ground from them? So yeah, the antics that you're talking about, bad. Bad all the way around. I have no defense for them. I think it's actually more important that we separate ourselves from them because we can be construed as them versus separating ourselves from ICE and Trump, where nobody's going to construe us for being on their side. So
yeah, and that's a great point because, listen, to use a rough analogy, when we're talking about J6, I view it for what it is, right? It was an attempt at an insurrection. There's going to be a lot of my friends, both libertarians, right-wingers, who are going to be, you're out of your mind. It was obviously a plot. It was obviously the deep state, whatever. Look at all the undercover FBI guys and all that. Whatever. My point when I criticize that is no undercover guy could come and get me, Big John, to hold my fat ass through a window to try to hang Mike Pence. I don't care how you instigated me. It's just not going to happen from me because I know better. So if I hold them to my standard at J6, in LA, I got to hold the rioters to the same standard. That regardless of who comes by and saying, hey, let's set this on fire. Let's rob this Apple store as a protest against the man, against the state. You know, my reaction still would be like, no, thank you. Right? So yep. To your point, knowing how to protest, what's within the scope of a good protest? Because all protests really have two purposes. One is the immediate thing you're protesting, the thing that's 10 feet in front of you, which in this case is ICE agents, National Guardsmen, whatever. But then there's also the effect of the protest to change hearts and minds. And nobody is going to be on your side if you're burning buildings. Nobody's going to be on your side if you're robbing Apple stores or running over people. Or, you know, beating the crap out of people. So, you know, let the goons do that, right? Because then they get the negative PR. They get the negative. And despite what some of our folks up in New Hampshire think, not all PR is good. Bad PR is not good, right? It's not all news is good news. All press coverage is good coverage. There's no such thing as bad publicity. Yeah, BS. You know, there is such a thing as bad publicity. And you're seeing it now if you're in LA. So having said all that, Hody, it's still kind of going in LA. It kind of got pushed a little bit out of the news cycle because of other recent events, which we're going to get to. But how do you think this ultimately ends, man? I mean, can the administration keep this up? I mean, with each passing day, we see more and more what honestly to me looks like third world behavior. Guys in masks, pulling up in vans, grabbing like teenagers, 22-year-olds, not gang members, not guys who have escaped, who have been adjudicated criminals and have escaped the clutches of the law. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a kid who was sweeping out a Best Buy. We're talking about a tourist in New York, a 45-year-old woman with her 12-year-old kid. The woman gets abducted into a van by these masked idiots, and the 12-year-old is left on the street by itself in a country that is not her home, okay? So as we see more and more of these examples, how long do you think Trump, which, again, as a populist, he made a promise, he's trying to fulfill a campaign promise, no matter how idiotic and irresponsible I may think that promise was. Do you think he's burning any of his capital, or do you think he's building political capital with his like determined pit bull, sort of like, I'm going to get rid of all these horrible illegal aliens, which very soon, I'm sure, we're not even going to consider human in this country?
Yeah, I don't think there's a question he's expending it. It's a question of maybe how much. You know, at this point now, you know, we talk about early political capital and those first years where you can actually do something, you're stepping on a few toes. And we kind of, I think, are at an end there. We got with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which, you know, is being altered and adjusted right now. But something that probably would have gotten passed, and then all of a sudden, all this bad behavior, and you had the Republicans come out and say, I didn't know this was in it. I didn't know this was in it. This is really bad. This is really bad. And so now all of a sudden, Trump's not getting his big AI surveillance state. Well, he's getting it, but at least not legally getting it through the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And so he is, you know, and then his divisions with Massey and Rand Paul, these are two people who endorsed him. And we're, you know, willing to lick the boot, bend the knee a little bit, right. But they have their limits, right? They have like a certain point where they can't cross. And so what's happening now is you see him capitulating when we look at the revisions to try and get this One Big Beautiful Bill Act through again to, because he's expended so much capital, he's less popular than ever, that now he is all of a sudden saying, all right, let's give the Democrats some more spending here. He's upped the price of the bill from adding $4 billion to the debt to $4 trillion to the debt to $5 trillion to the debt in its latest iteration. I'm still kind of looking over all the changes. They're only recommended right now, so I won't go over like all the details, but he's already capitulating to try and buy people because he's lost their support functionally. And there are people who are going to double, triple, whatever down. You know, you've got the Mike Lees and you've got the Cat Turds. But Mike Lee and Cat Turd are not Capitol Hill. And, like, they are not these people. You know, Mike Lee is safe because he's from Utah. Yay, my state, right? There's nothing that's going to happen to him there. You know, but there is nothing stopping a lot of these guys that are up for elections and they want to win. And they're not principled. I mean, these are politicians we're talking about, but they look at something incredibly unpopular. And Trump with everything, you talk about the populism. Let's think about all the major things Trump has done and how he's wavered on them. Tariffs. On off. His orders to what people to deport, right? On off. Oh, are we going after these farms? It was yes, then it was no. Now it's back to yes again. Then it's back to yes in these states, no in these states, right? Like he is
literally acting like he's responding to the last donor that called him, it seems like. You know, like, so if the farming sector donors got to him, which they did, obviously, hey, guess what? Like, I had a very simple question for MAGA because, again, the puppets, the talking, you know, the talking paid agitators on X, as soon as he said, perfect example on immigration was, hey, we're not going to go after these farmhands that help sustain. They've been here for 20 years. They're not criminals. So if they've been here for 20 years and they're working hard, why get rid of them? So my question to all these sycophants who are like, see, he's smart. Okay, if you're busy getting rid of all the illegal aliens, how do they get to 20 years in this country? How do they get to that point of trust? Like, they don't wake up tomorrow magically having 20 years having lived in this country and having worked in this country. The ability to have a little bit of common sense, and again, for the MAGA supporters, where is Vivek Ramaswamy? There's a reason he's disappeared, and it all came from an immigration kerfuffle. Because in my opinion, Ramaswamy said, wait a second, when we were talking about getting rid of illegal aliens and shutting the borders, we really didn't mean all the smart people from India, right? We didn't mean that. That's not what I meant, Mr. President. When I was spouting off about this imaginary libertarian nationalism, right? I didn't think that we were going to cut off H-1Bs for really smart kids to come over here just because they're not white. Oh, but wait a second. He was the first one to go. right? What was it, like a month into the administration? No more Doge for Vivek, nothing. He said, you know what? I see where this train wreck is going. While the Trump brand is still strong, I'm going to go run for governor of Ohio. So I just get rid of, right? Yeah. So people forget about that right now. But where's Vivek, MAGA? Like, he couldn't take your racism and your bigotry as a group. Again, not to collectivize everyone. We're aware of that. But there's a reason why Vivek isn't there. When his eyes opened up, finally, he was like, well, I can't truck with this anymore. All right. So,
well, let's talk about what, like, populism is for a minute. Because, like, populism isn't just doing what is popular. Populism is trying to make the thing that you want popular, and that's the way you get things through. So this is different from a standard politician where they will just try to manipulate the courts and buy a few politicians. Populists will say, I really want to deport people. It's not popular. How do I make it popular? And so when we talk, this expenditure of political capital for a populist includes social capital. And you'll recall you're talking about like how the base kind of had a backlash. You can tell that MAGA and Trump asked the social influencers, their paid social influencers, to blast this idea that – remember all of them did it in one day, that they need to deport legal immigrants as well, right?
Right,
like, let's
right.
not just stop now. Now, here's the thing with that. This is an expenditure because these social media accounts, once they saw that, they know they're in Trump's pocket, right? They see all the usual types. They say it all on the same day and they go, oh, okay, well, I don't trust that guy anymore. And so these social media guys who are receiving, I'm sure, substantial payments and kickbacks and rewards and views and everything like that. It's a big corrupt system or whatever, but they're getting their kickbacks from Trump, sure. But their base, their viewers, aren't going to watch them as much anymore. And so the odds of them getting away with that again are much less. And we saw that happen. So we had the immigration. Now look what has happened for Iran. How many do you see? Again, I'm sure he's putting out that same blast to all his social media guys to be like, hey, you guys said deport the legals like I asked you to. Now let's talk about amping up the war, protecting Israel, you know, and all my interests. And a lot of these influencers are like, I honestly took a big enough hit with you. I'm done at this point. I mean,
to mention
the waffling, just to finish off.
Yeah, sure, please. Yeah.
Ukraine and Iran, another one we're getting conflict. Like you mentioned, did he just get off like with the latest caller? I don't know what his plan is. He changes it every day.
Right.
Go ahead.
No. You did the right thing, and I just want to set it up a little bit. But we're going to take a breather before we do. We had a comment from Joe Johnson. He says, "What's up?" I don't know, Joe. What is up, man? Everything's up. That's what we're doing. Everything is up, Joe. Send us a question. Keep watching. Thank you for watching. And also Chris Mosher was cheering you on while you were talking there, Hody. And everybody, please, we're live. Hop onto YouTube, Rumble, X, or Facebook. Pop a question in the chat. We'll be happy to take it here on the show. As long – you know our only rule, no four-letter words, okay? If you use four-letter words, I'll read your comment, but I won't put you up on the screen. That's Big John's clamping down on free speech, as I'm sure Dave Smith would probably accuse me of if he ever paid attention. Okay, let's move on. We talked about Iran, and obviously this happened right at the end of our show, live show last week, the news that Israel had preemptively bombed Iranian nuclear facilities. Now, what's interesting about this, not so much that Israel did this, like you can count on something like this happening. What is interesting, Hody, to me, is the reaction. And it came fast and furious, right? Because in this particular case, this was not a defensive posture. This was not a defensive move. This was an offensive move. This is a proactive move. The reason given by Israel was, hey, we can't let Iran get a nuclear weapon, notwithstanding the fact that Israel has 80 nuclear warheads. But they were like, hey, we can't let these Iranians and this government that has publicly stated that they want to get rid of Israel. They want to wipe Israel off the map. It's not in our national security to allow them to build a nuclear weapon. Okay, you get that. The immediate reaction, though, of a lot of, especially libertarians, was, whoa, wait a second. Is the U.S. party to this? Did Trump give them the green light? Are we supporting them in any way? Well, what's interesting is, and this is a lot, so I may sound like I'm bouncing all over the place, Hoda. You may have to rein me in a little bit. Well, let's rein me in a little bit, all right?
All right.
One of the first things we saw was Dave Smith, the comedian, libertarian pontificator, podcaster, was almost the LP presidential nominee this last cycle if he stayed in the race. Mises darling. Well, you know, he came out and said, hey, I now renounce Trump. I made a mistake. I falsely and not, perhaps naively, but hey, it was the best choice at the time. I apologize, and I now say that Trump should be impeached over this. That this is horrible and this should never happen. Now, when this happened, Hoedster, I couldn't help but smile. Okay? I'm not a good Christian. I smiled at this and said, ha, gotcha. And I could also say, told you so. Now, of course, there were a lot of people that agreed with me. There were a lot of people that said, hey, we told you this in real time. Like, why are you supporting Donald Trump? You know, he's, especially if you're a native New Yorker like myself, the past 50 years, New Yorkers have learned just to ignore the BS that constantly spills out of Trump's mouth because we all knew. It's like, you can't trust anything he says. If he told you it was raining today, I wouldn't believe him, even if I was getting in the middle of a downpour, right? We're just accustomed to it. And the fact that someone as intelligent as Dave, a New Yorker like Dave, could say, no, we think Trump at the age of 77 has turned a new leaf. His personality is completely different. He will never participate in this type of warmongering. He would never act like a neocon. And yet, Hody, here we are. Now, that was the first reaction. So let me stop there, take a break, and ask you to comment. What was your reaction to the reaction of libertarians listening to what Dave Smith had to say, rather?
I guess I wasn't that surprised. Dave Smith, well, Trump has not been consistently pro or anti-war, and this is something when we look at his tweets, he promised both peace he's got like 8 tweets being like, if you declare war on Iran, that just means you're weak and you're ineffective and you're
with the Obama administration. Yes.
Right. Well, yeah. And said and warned that Biden might get involved with Iran too because right. He's such an ineffective leader. So he's got a bunch of those tweets. But for every one of those tweets, there's another one where he's like, if they, you know, I would turn him into a glass sheet. I think he said he would, smithereens, he would take all their big cities and reduce them to smithereens. He's yep. talked about turning Gaza into a glass sheet. So it's one of those that you and I knew he wasn't principally pro-peace because Donald Trump isn't principally anything. But right. he was, for every pro-peace tweet you could find from him, he had, you know, whatever. And I forget whether it was one of them between Angela McCardle and Michael Heiss. One of them said he's going to be, it looks like with his cabinet, he's going to be terrible on foreign policy. So just give up on that, but he's going to have good domestic policy. And the other one said he's going to have good foreign policy, but have terrible domestic policy. Turns out the answer was both. Right. But, you know, so, hey, I get to say McCardle and Heiss were both right, you know, partially at least on this one. But I forget which one, but just it's because the evidence was there. He loaded it up with war hawks. We saw very early on from the leaked signal chat that the people who were supposed to be pro-peace, the Tulsi Gabbard and the Hegseth people, and the Patels, right, that all these guys are actually some of the strongest voices for war now within this administration. That pro-peace was – those are great talking points to the public to get your vote. But now that they have your vote, they're not beholden to you anymore. And so, like, you notice this is so Trump, right? This is obvious that all he wants is your vote. He wants your support. He wants your money. He wants whatever. And then as soon as you've given it to him, ask any of the contractors who work for him. He doesn't care to pay you back, right? Like, once you do the work for him, once you give him the money, he's done. It's over. And so, like, he has never experienced a beholdenness to anyone other than himself and his principles. So, or whatever those may be, but his ideas, his legacy, his vision of what he wants. And so I guess to me, it was not surprising because I will say, unlike Trump, while I do find that Dave Smith has issues, I will say Dave Smith is somewhat consistent. He's been anti-immigrant for as long as I remember. He's been anti-LGBTQ for as long as I remember. He's been anti-war, though, as well, for as long as I remember. You know, he can consistently vote for, you know, Republicans as lesser evils. You know, this is a... I know who Dave Smith is at this point because he's principled. So I kind of figured that this war thing, especially war on behalf of Israel and knowing Dave's audience and looking at Dave's comments, you have to know the anti-Semitic level that the audience has, right? And that this is a non-zero factor within your base. And so when this is something that it's war on behalf of Israel and coordinating with Israel, right. Yeah, audience capture alone, even if, and I want to be clear about this. I do think Dave Smith is principled on this, but I think his audience, especially because of that capture, makes it so that there's no way you can continue to hide your head in the sand about this, you know? And so I think that, well, unfortunately, their reasons aren't right. I guess I wasn't surprised to see that Dave Smith and his audience were going to be like, if you ally with Israel against anybody, it's over. Because, I mean, we even, to put this in perspective, how much different this is than before, Trump negotiated the deal with Ukraine. We're sending them arms and supplies, you know, in exchange for minerals. It's no different than kind of the Biden administration. We're involved in a war. That wasn't a breaking point. We worked with Israel. That's a breaking point. And that, and fortunately, I know anti-Semitism plays a lot with it. I will say, I do think Dave Smith is actually anti-war, in factuality, but this just makes it so that unlike before where he could get over a war of arming Ukraine, he cannot get over a war of coordinating attacks with Israel.
Right, right. Very quickly.
Yeah.
Archie on YouTube, Dave had called Trump a war criminal previous to his support, absolutely. Yep. He was, and he, in his mea culpa, he said that. But also, just to weave LP politics into this, there's folks now who are like, give Dave Smith a pass. How could, like, my timeline was filled with people criticizing my post, saying, oh my goodness, how could Dave have possibly known that Trump would flip-flop on this? And my answer was, what do you mean, how could you have possibly known? My question would be is, how could you be deluded into thinking he wouldn't flip-flop on this, right? Like, to me, that's the big question. And then, of course, I got upset at some people and said, you know, well, this is what happens when you try to run a political party when you've had all the experience of a 30-year-old or a 25-year-old. You know, you think that what pops into your head in terms of strategy has never been thought of before, has never been tried before. And there's a reason why, as you've pointed out as well many times, there's a reason why libertarians don't sell out to either Democrats or Republicans. If you think you could affect one party one way or the other, you leave the Libertarian Party and you go into that party, right? Like my friend, not everybody's best friend right now, but my friend Mike Termine said, I think I could affect more liberty change in the Republican Party. He's not doing it from the Libertarian Party. He said thank you and goodbye and went to the Republican Party. If Dave Smith really, really thinks that the best option for liberty, by the way, according to his own endorsement, seems to always be the MAGA candidate, always seems to be the Republican candidate, then by all means, go affect the affect policy from the Republican, as a Republican. Try to be like Thomas Massie. Try to be like Rand Paul, you know, like that. So to that extent, and again, I'm not saying the strategy is good or bad. I'm just saying if you're going to do it the right way, which is, you know, just say you're a Republican now, right? So to me, that was the issue. But to libertarians now, I'll say, like, because a lot of people also, Hody, I don't know if you got this as well, were like, ah, no need to point a finger now. Let's just move on and figure out what we're going to do. Here's the problem. Every time you do that, you're enabling the same cast of characters to pull off the same trick again and again and again. So do I think it's worth obsessing on for the next 10 years? No. Is it worth constantly pointing out that the people who empowered Dave Smith, the people that Dave Smith empowered, this is a two-way street using his platform and his bullhorn, right? Yes, those people are still lurking around. Yes, they're still trying to take over in 2026. Yes, they've got even more nonsense planned. that's why you have to properly call this out. If you're not part of the MAGA plants, if you're not part of the so-called national libertarian nationalists, or Northeastern Incel Society, whatever. If you're not part of those groups, then you need to call this out. You need to say, like, this is where this got us, you know? Yeah. Much like we talked last week about the porcupine, rainbow porcupine tweet. Got to call it out. You got to say, what was wrong with this? Why? What is the real reason that you guys are upset about this? So, yeah, that was interesting to me that we did see that. But,
yeah. So Dave Smith, I think part of the issue was not only was he for the sellout strategy, but he was very cruel to people who were against it. Somebody put together a compilation of things that he said about people who weren't down with the sellout strategy.
Right.
Calling it everything from worse than communists to, you know, idiots, right? Like just the usual, like, do-nothings, blowhards, right? Like just I would need to pull up the compilation.
Right, right.
But, I mean, everybody knows this was the gist of it. And, of course, Dave Smith's audience was even nastier than he was. You know, he has, you know, I guess he's used the F slur before, but this usually is not saying it to somebody's face. They have no problem, you know, harassing you, belittling you,
right,
humiliating you, you know, oh, you're so stupid, you're a do-nothing, you're libertarian in name only, you just want a social club, et cetera, et cetera. And now that it's time to eat crow, it's like, am I surprised that people don't want to give him any grace or him and his audience any grace? Well, of course not. They behave so badly that now that the other side is right, now the godly good thing to do would to just be like, okay, thank you, I'll forgiveness and let's move on. But they didn't act in a godly way, so people aren't inclined to give that to them, you know, to make them feel good or welcome or whatever. And then here's the other part, and I think more important to what you're alluding to specifically here, is that if he's going to, since he thought that it was such a great idea, never been done before, et cetera, obviously, people told him the history of the paleo movement. People were trying to jam facts down his throat. He ignored until, you know, it became unignorable anymore. And so the issue that we have now is that it's like, okay, so you were like this. How far away are you from leadership? And I think that's the more difficult question that the Dave Smith and supporters have to answer, is now that he not only got it wrong, but showed just how far off he is from understanding the nature of politics. Because people who understood the nature of politics saw what was happening right away, you know. And it's like, this is somebody whose judgment, I'm not going to say don't listen to, I listen to part of the problem. I listen to Dave Smith. I find him to be, you know, intriguing. I like that he highlights stories that aren't getting a lot of media attention. I think it's great. But he is not prepared to be in the political arena yet. If he is falling for really, like, honestly, idiotic ideas like this. I mean, we listened to even Angela McArdle talking about how the sellout came to be, working with the feds, and you trusted them? I mean, as a libertarian, you just got to go, oh, okay, I trusted the feds. That was really dumb. I'm not saying – now, I don't want to gatekeep him out, but just understand that your role is no longer going to be strategy anymore. Right. Like at least for a while, until you've shown that you have the correct judgment, right, that you understand the nature of politics. Right. And I think that's going to be something that him and his audience are going to give me and people like me far more backlash for, that I say, I'm glad you're in the movement, but you can't be leading us, you know, politically or in these strategies, because you're still a baby. In this way, you don't understand this arena. So you are, until you grow up, until you kind of understand this arena, I'm sorry, but like, you've got to take a back seat a little bit on this front. Keep highlighting issues when the government oversteps. This isn't to say you have no role. Your role just isn't in this political strategy field.
Right. And I think that's something that, again, maybe his supporters, and like Archie on YouTube has a comment here. I just want to throw it up before I say what I have to say. There's also the fact that Dave hasn't really changed. He'll support Nick Fuentes et al. Yeah, and that kind of leads into what I was going to say, which is that it's one thing if he is apologetic and remorseful, not just for supporting Trump, but for supporting that strategy. Because if he just says, I regret supporting Trump, The part he's not saying is whether he regrets the strategy, which was completely foolish and ill-considered and all that fun stuff, of inviting other major party candidates to our nominating convention and giving them airtime. And so, not that they needed our airtime, but taking airtime away from our candidates. And then turning on our candidates, turning on Chase Oliver. Like someone said, what was he supposed to do? My answer is, look, if you're a leader of the Libertarian Party and you don't support Chase Oliver, you have three options. Shut up, disappear, or leave the party. Those are your three options. The option of, I'm going to call myself a Libertarian leader or influencer and sit here and crap on Chase Oliver and Mike Termont is not an option for an adult. It's not an option if you want to have any sort of influence in politics. And it was not just Dave Smith. There was a lot of libertarians like that, yep. Right? And we called them all out. And it's like, if you can't support – and this is why you give someone like Karen Ann Harlow's a lot of credit. She apologized. She said, I made a mistake in supporting this. But she's backed it up with her actions, right? She caught a lot of grief. She still stood by what she needed to do. She flew out to states where ballot access was an issue, lended her support to get Chase on those ballots against her own leadership's direction and desires and wishes. So to me, that's a person that says, I'm really sorry about what I did. What I did was ill-conceived. I made a mistake. Forgive me. Someone who comes to you like that, with that sort of wisdom, with that sort of understanding, with that realization, self-realization, you're more than happy to say, come on, everyone makes a mistake. You pat them on the back, give them a hug, and you say, let's go at it again. Dave Smith has shown none of that remorse. Dave Smith, to me, is more upset that he got his call wrong. He's not upset that he sold out the party. He's not upset that this was a ridiculous strategy to embark upon. He's upset that the guy he supported has disappointed him. And maybe that's a subtle difference, Hody, but to me that's a major difference. It's a difference of maturity almost. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that? Do you think he's really contrite? Do you think he's really sorry for the strategic decision to ignore everybody and go off almost on their own, like with the rest of the Mises crew? Or is it just a matter of, I'm sorry that I went out on the limb for Trump and now people know that I supported this guy?
You know, I'm going to extend as much grace as I can to Dave on this matter, that when we first get called out for being wrong, that's a lot of times when we're the most hostile.
Sure.
Right? When we're, you look at whether it's like drug addicts who steal something and they're like, oh, I guess I should have done that. Right. And you're still there defensive. But even that is the first step towards something greater. And I guess what I would say to answer that question, I'm uncomfortable predicting it, but I think time will tell. I think that this is something where if he suddenly starts issuing apologies to those who he attacked, who he called names, if he takes it seriously to fix the culture around him so that the people who told him truthfully what was going on, if they get a bigger seat at the table and a better spot in the culture that he's built and the society that he has around him, that his actions are going to prove it, right? Like, by his works they shall know us. Nobody's perfect, right? Like, we will know him by his works. So they talk about what does it take to be immune to cult mind control. Basically, you need to be like some type of sociopath to be immune from these techniques. So I don't blame anybody for getting it wrong. I worked for George W. Bush's second campaign. I understand what it is like to get it very wrong. But I recognized that I was at the start of my liberty journey when I was getting that wrong. You know, right. And that this is something that was a great wake up point. I'm very excited for Dave to begin kind of that libertarian journey, right? Like, he's been LARPing on it a little bit. Obviously, we still know how he feels. He agrees with the neocons and Douglas Murray about mass deportations. He looks the other way. I think one of the tough things about Dave Smith is that smirk while he's like talking about like a mistake that was made. Like, sure, are they going to sometimes, you know, deport a grandma? And it's like, listen, I don't find it funny, right? Right? Like, it's not cool. Yeah. It's not like, oh, what a cute little hilarious mistake. Like, ICE had three people die in their custody this last month, and all of them were under the age of 50 with no medical, like, issues. Like, it was like, this is death. Like, these are really bad mistakes that the government that you supported, and supported their policy on this one, by the way, like, this is their mistake. And so what I want to see is just growth from Dave in this area towards the area of liberty. Nobody is the perfect libertarian, and I don't want to gatekeep out imperfect people, but we do want to see that growth, right? We want to make sure that they're becoming more libertarian, as opposed to, as you say, like, is there a very, and I want to be clear about this as well, I wouldn't ever put this on Dave unless it became really obvious, like Rechtenwald level obvious.
Right.
But anti-Semitism is certainly a possibility, right? Why is it he can get over the fact that it's like, yeah, war with Russia, I guess we're arming that again, that was kind of a big deal, but whatever, versus Israel and Iran, you know? Like, it's like, man, like, sometimes people get the issue right for the wrong reasons. Candace Owens and Kanye West right now got the Iran war correct. They have the libertarian position. They just don't have the libertarian philosophy. Libertarianism is not simply a set of doctrines. It's a mentality. This is why I have no problem, like, Big John, I know you and I disagree with minarchy, anarchy, that kind of thing. But we both possess the libertarian mentality. It makes it easy to relate to one another.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah. Whereas, like, me and Dave Smith's audience, I can't be there. Like, because it's not, like, a libertarian, free-thinking environment. This is not encouraging dissent. This is not something where they say, hey, listen, learn from the people who do it better. There's a lot of things that Dave Smith does better than me, and I listen to him because I like to learn those things. I just want to see a reciprocation when Dave Smith says, I think there's some things that maybe I need to learn from all the people who tried to teach me the history of this, and I ignored them, and I called them names, and I tore them down. And not only was my idea wrong, but my behavior with them was incorrect and not very libertarian. Dave Smith himself has said no movement will succeed unless it's based in love. And I think he should be one of the first to tell you that maybe his language with those people who weren't down with the sellout wasn't all that loving.
I don't want to focus only on Dave, but the thing is, I don't think he's an anti-Semite. I can't formalize why I don't think he is, but I don't think he is.
Part Jewish, right?
He is Jewish. I think he is Jewish, but
I don't know what he is.
He's always claimed he's Jewish. Now, whether that means he was born into being a Jew or not, I don't know. Or if he's a cultural Jew, I have no idea. But I don't get the impression that he's an anti-Semite. I really don't. And usually. I have like a sixth sense about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't view him as anti-Semite, but I think Israel, the situation with Israel as opposed to the situation with Ukraine, which he was also upset about, mm-hmm. rightfully so, you're right. He seems to be triggered more by the Israel situation as opposed to the Ukraine situation. So I do agree with you on that. And maybe it's just because there's a longer history with Israel and getting into these wars with them.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. But let's move on slightly from this. So, what do we want our position here with Israel to be, and what are we upset about? Because Hody, part of what also formulated this weekend was this interview with Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz went on Tucker Carlson's, too many first names begin with T, his ex show, and I'm very neutral towards Tucker Carlson. I don't love him. I don't hate him. I'm just like, okay. I have to admit, he ran circles around Cruz. Cruz looked like an immature, just like a neophyte at this game. And there were a lot of times when Cruz was just stuttering and tripping over his words. And to me, the most eye-opening part was when he was going back and forth with Tucker. Tucker hit him with his Aleppo moment, right? Like, how many people are living? What's the population of Iran? What's their population composition? And Cruz was like, I don't know. Whatever. They're Shia, right? Okay. Yeah. And Tucker correctly pointed out, you're for regime change. You're for bombing these people. You have no idea who they are. You don't know how many people you might be killing or anything like that. What was more telling to me was when he said, he maneuvered him into a point where Cruz said, we're bombing Israel. At which point Tucker Carlson jumped out all over it, of course, and said, what do you mean we? I thought you said Israel. We have nothing to do with this. It's only Israel. He said, well, by we, I mean Israel. I mean, Israel's doing the bombing. We're supporting. And he goes, well, that contradicts this spokesman from the Trump administration who said we haven't given them any support, or, you know, and you could see him panic almost, you know, you could see the gears stripping in his head, right? So do you think that Cruz let the cat out of the bag, or was he just overwhelmed? Did he fumble his words? Do you think he's like, uh-oh, is the boss going to be upset?
Yeah, so I'm not sure what was going through Cruz's mind. He wanted to distance himself from the war, but at the same time, we know Cruz is for war. So why would he have a problem saying we did this, that, and the other, right? Like, you would just think it's basically he's trying to change his position just because he's talking to Carlson, who, while I am not a fan, he is correct on this particular issue. And so it's one of those where it's like he wants to look good for that audience, and he knows that as soon as he says, yeah, we were in this war, that doesn't play as well when he says we're in this war on Fox and Friends, right? Like, that's different audiences, you know? And so we see him try to change, but as you mentioned, very obvious, he was off guard, said he wasn't prepared for the questions that he was going to get. And I honestly think that with Cruz, okay, so let's just look at some facts. The U.S. government, our military officials have already said that they did coordinate with Israel for these attacks. And the bombs that they're using, oddly enough, on both the Iranian side and Israeli side, are made here in the USA. So we know that this is – that we are involved. Blood is on our hands no matter what we do, whether we want to call it we or not. Now, and I will say, while I don't want to give – the U.S. too much credit here because we are complicit in this war. They did say, hey, we told Israel, we gave them some targets to attack, but we also, they asked to attack certain targets and we told them no. So there are certain, so we are working with them at a very key level when we're deciding which targets they hit, which ones are okay, which ones are not okay, and supplying their ammunition for it. So there's no doubt that we have something to do with this. Now, Cruz is, like I said, trying to distance himself here by saying, like, well, Israel, they were the ones that launched it. But when we are giving you the intel and we are coordinating the targets, yes, you may have the launchers, but we are supplying the ammunition. Right. This is the definition of a coordinated effect, right? We have to kind of say we if we're talking about political representation, because we – there is – if I give you a gun, Big John, but no bullets, and, you know, you can't kill anybody with that gun, right? Whereas if between the two of us we have a gun and bullets and use it to kill somebody, then all of a sudden we are both responsible for that, right? Now, obviously, as a gun manufacturer, you might be like, well, I can't be responsible for what they targeted, except in this case, not only did we give bullets to the person who bought the gun, we told them who it was okay to kill and not kill, and the locations of those people. Right. So Cruz was actually being honest when he said we. He just wishes he wasn't honest in front of Tucker Carlson.
Well, that's what I meant, right? Like,
yeah.
And this was in the face of the Trump administration denying that we had anything to do with it. Initially, right?
Right.
So you have that. So you have that, and to me also now you start to see that fracture. Like, people who are diehard Trumpers, you know, all of a sudden, again on X, you mentioned Candace Owens. Some of these MAGA guys were like, "Hey, we didn't sign up for this. We're all for throwing out defenseless human beings just because they happen to be born on the wrong side of an imaginary border, but we're more than happy to drop bombs on Iranians." One thing I have to tell you, Hody, that during this interview that I found very disturbing, towards the end when they were still going back and forth, and by the way, for those of you that haven't seen it, it was a contentious interview. There was no niceties about it, right? Like, if those two guys had baseball bats, I'm pretty sure they'd be swinging at each other's heads.
There's one part where Carlson laughed in Cruz's face, like, yeah. And I was like, whoa, like, there, yeah. That's nasty.
That was nasty. That was a very awkward and uncomfortable yet entertaining interview for that reason, right? Because it was raw nerves exposed. And at one point, Carlson was trying to say, give me a reason why we're doing this. Like, it can't, you know, and there were these allegations that Iran is trying to assassinate the president and other U.S. cabinet members. And, well, if that's the case, why didn't we declare war on them? Why, you know, and it was going back and forth. And finally, Cruz just blurted out, well, you know, I believe in the Bible. I follow the Bible. The Bible says we got to support the nation of Israel and all that. Now, Hody, I defer to you. Like I said, and I'm not doing this to be funny, I'm not a Bible scholar. I couldn't tell you chapter and verse or anything like that. But a lot of religious people commented, yeah, he got that wrong. He's quoting the wrong thing. The context is all off. But even more disturbing to me is that if you're planning to engage in war, perhaps illegally, definitely unconstitutionally, why want my people at the helm as their main source misquoting the Bible? Like, that really put me in the frame of mind that we're a theocracy now. And this was on top of Hegseth, like, in Congress. Like, I think some senators said, asked him a question about turning the troops on U.S. citizens, and he said, you read too many books. The only book I read is the Bible, or something to that effect. Yeah. I'm paraphrasing. So, now, like, and Hody, again, I don't mean this to be disrespectful to anybody's religion, but when I hear that coming out of elected officials who have a lot of power, I mean, the power to directly affect people's lives, that's concerning to me, isn't it? That you're resorting to the Bible as your justification for war. You're resorting to the Bible for your justification of throwing out all these illegal immigrants. That's really upsetting to me right now.
Let me try to spit out some mad Bible facts here. Go ahead, please.
Yeah.
There's a verse in the Bible that says, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. So the idea that you don't need the Bible is actually counter, or that you only need the Bible is actually counter to the Bible. The Bible wants you to go and seek truth. Jesus tells a parable of a guy who, when guests come over, he brings out the old truths as well as new truths, right? Now, no truth is actually new, so to speak, but our discovery of it is new, right? Jesus himself said, there's a lot more that I have to teach you, but you're not ready for it yet. And the Holy Spirit will give it to you when you're ready for it. You will find it. And the Holy Spirit, I mean, one of the gifts, knowledge, right? Wisdom. Both gifts of the Spirit. And so this is something that, like, the idea that Christians only need the Bible and that will help us with archaeology and physics and stuff is just, it's silly, right? Like, we can point out times that the Bible even hints that the earth isn't the center of the universe, right? That it's not heliocentric the way that the Bible is described in Genesis, or that the sun and earth are described in Genesis, not just chapter one, but also how the sun holds its place in the sky and the earth stops moving. That we see that's like, oh, there's actually indication. Great. But the details of that are going to be found through science. If we're trying to calculate exactly how much to do, it's through science. This is a very important part that you're talking about, because these are people who are, like in Cruz, who are overt Christian nationalists, right? They will tell you, we are Christian nationalists. Trump is, you know, virtue signal to them. Even if they deny it, they're like, why wouldn't you want the Bible to be a Christian nation? So the misinterpretation here comes from this, that, and this is what is what Cruz and Carlson talk about very directly. Is this the same Israel that is mentioned in the Bible? That is, you know, the great holy place of God's dwelling, the best, you know, people on the earth or whatever, the best nation ever. And it's absolutely not, right? Like, politically, it's very different. Now, I am very sympathetic to the fact that the Jews were dispersed, and it was wrong that that happened. But it's no doubt that this is political entity that we have today that's set up is not the same as the one in the scriptures. Even if it was, I want to be very clear about the Bible on this one. God makes a promise to Solomon that Israel will last forever and ever so long as they are holy, so long as they do good, so long as they love their neighbors and foreigners, and that they're kind to everybody, and that they're doing, that they are behaving themselves in good conduct. This is a promise that actually gets repeated over and over in the Old Testament that says, hey, if your behavior, Israel, is good, nobody can stop you. You don't need help from anybody. So first of all, God's saying you don't need help from the United States, right? Because he's saying, I will defend you. God will defend you if you are walking in holiness. The second part of this equation is that when God gives that promise, he says it's forever and ever so long as you're holy. That doesn't even survive Solomon's own generation. His people are unholy. They do bad things. Now, I'm not going to collectivize all Jews because that's wrong. I'm not going to collectivize all Israelis because that's wrong. But as a political entity, you are looking at a country. Iran made the unfortunate decision or maybe misfire, whatever, but they blew up a hospital, a Jewish hospital, which was, you know, unfortunate and wrong, right? Like, I don't believe in retaliation against innocent people, right? Like, this is wrong. But Israel, there is not one single standing hospital in the Gaza Strip because Israel blew them all up. Now, you tell me the Bible passage that would indicate to you that this means that they are a godly people, that they are loving their foreigners, that the foreigners that live among them are perfectly welcome to behave as that they will, and that you are killing this many innocent people in a hospital. And that, and as much as we point out, well, sometimes they put the missile silos right next to the hospitals. Look at the videos of where Israel is launching their bomb, their missiles from. It's unreal. It's in the middle of a bunch of like apartment buildings and hotels. Like this is poor behavior that God tells us in the Bible, and God actually executes in the Bible. The very next generation after Solomon, God's like, go ahead, take them over. It's not going to last, right? All right, bad guys. It's over now. I'm not protecting them anymore because they are not behaving in a godly way. If Israel behaves in a godly way and you believe in that Bible theocracy, America doesn't need any help. So regardless of how you're interpreting the Bible here, either God's got their help or they need to behave in a godly way. Neither of those two things are happening. And then tack that on to the fact that this is a very different political entity than the one that we were dealing with. First of all, that was a nation of people. This is a political territory of people, which is, again, very different. The rules that applied to Jews when they went over the seas were the same.
Right.
Whereas, you know what I mean? Whereas now we're applying different rules for people in Israel than Jews that live here in America. And that means by default, by just perfectly human understanding, that these are very different. I appreciate you giving me a lot of leeway to explain this.
No, but there's that part of it which you're saying that Cruz's comment is nonsense based on the scripture itself and the understanding of scripture, which I appreciate because, like I said, this is subtle stuff for me, right? Like I don't profess to be a scholar in biblical study. I really don't. But also to me, it's even perhaps simpler than that because, again, I'm not that smart a guy. But what's interesting to me is if you allow yourself to, as a nation, to behave as a theocracy, you're granting that right to every other nation. And in doing so, that means nothing an Islamic state does under the guise of them following their holy scripture should offend you. And it should never be a reason for you to be upset at that, you know, if you're the United States, right? Because very easily, if Cruz's justification for war is my interpretation of the Bible tells me to do so, if Pete Hegseth's reasoning for turning the armed services on his own citizens is the Bible is the only book I read, then A, read more books. Two, we're not a theocracy. There's a reason why we have our Constitution. So, you know, to me, that was the truly frightening part of it, that there's a U.S. senator who's sitting there justifying war based on his interpretation of the Bible. And think about that, you know, like, if you were to ask whoever, what's your justification for setting off bombs in malls? It's my interpretation of the Quran, man. It's my interpretation of the Bible. It tells me to blow up abortion clinics. Most of us would instantly recognize that as nonsense.
Yeah.
So why don't we do it on a geopolitical scale would be my question. All right, Hody, final question. I know we've talked for a while. By the way, thank you to everybody who's tuned in. If you have a chance, please hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. It helps us grow as a channel. It helps us grow as a show. Helps us get out into the various algorithms, whether it's on X, Rumble, YouTube, or Facebook. Do us a favor. It doesn't cost you a dime. Just hit those clicks, please. We really appreciate it. Hody, last question. Are we seeing the beginning of a fracture in MAGA? Something like, look, a lot of people are saying once Trump is out of office, MAGA disappears. Because you see that when someone who has the otherworldly charisma of Trump, if you're lacking that, you see how you come off. You come off like Ted Cruz. You come off like you have all the charm of chlamydia. It just doesn't work unless you have that idiotic charm that Trump has, right? So is this the beginning of a schism? So a lot of us said, look, MAGA falls apart, and then there's a battle for the Republican Party in 2028. But may we perhaps see that a little bit sooner? Because look at the things look at the capital he's expending, right, on immigration. And it's not going exactly the way he pictured it. On the economy, yeah, those tariffs, no matter how much he tells you that they're wonderful and that, you know, this and that, he caved on all those. He caved on all those. And now, perhaps the biggest one of all, he promised to end the Ukraine war in 24 hours. Well, I guess he hasn't picked the right day yet because that's still going on. And now we're on the verge of war with Iran. Do you think his coalition starts to splinter a lot sooner than 2028?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I think we tend to, as political analysts, overanalyze when a party seems to lose its way. But they have people behind the scenes that are orchestrating things. When I read Original Sin, the idea that the political parties can still ask the CIA to do something and they just do it, right? Well, even if they don't have the presidency, they can just be like, hey, push out this story. It's not true. And they go, okay, right? So like the levers that they have at their control are unreal. I think here's my hesitation. Because the Democrats are identity free at the moment. They badly need a Tea Party movement in the Democratic Party.
They need something, man. They need something.
And you look at the leadership just this week. I mean, we tend to talk about, because this is kind of a paleo conservative, you know, occasional libertarian, you know, network that we're on, that we don't talk about the left and their infrastructure very much.
Right.
And if we take a peek at what's going on over there, they have a leader that just got rid of David Hogg for David Hogg being like, we need to primary these old, ineffective Democrats that aren't living up to any principles at all. I'm not a Democrat. David Hogg does not share my principles. But that said, he tried to actually do something that would make a change, and they got rid of him. So this is a Democratic establishment that is truly committed to the old generation establishment. And therefore, they're not going to be able to poach MAGA the way that they need to. They're not going to be able to take advantage of these events unless we see some kind of grassroots effort. I don't expect that to come from the DNC. I do expect to see that come from some other cultural icon that decides to be like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and take this mail from the progressives right now because the Democratic Party is not a good home to us. And I've spent a lot of the time, it feels like, not answering your question, but I think the issue is that MAGA doesn't fall apart unless people have someplace to go, right? Like, people don't just leave cults because the cult was just no fun anymore. They leave cults when their family surrounds them. They say, we miss you. We want you back here. Listen to Daryl Davis talk sometime.
Right.
The KKK creates this insular group. You always have their support. You always have these great things. Daryl Davis spends very little time talking about racism and why it's wrong to KKK members. He spends more time saying, look at these cool family gatherings and friends groups I have and people who will help you move. And like, look at all this infrastructure over here. Don't you want to be a part of that? And so we need to look at what MAGA will do if they fracture, and they need something else that has some kind of infrastructure. Now, that is something, you know, when we talk about MAGA, the Republican Party is not going anywhere because of, you know, politics. But as far as MAGA falling apart, that is something that I think we probably are starting to see and probably will see. We look at guys that were willing to jump ship early, like Vivek, who saw it right? And Vivek, again, another MAGA sellout, but, you know, this is somebody, Dave Smith, another guy who's, you know, now dividing with his base, now dividing with Trump. Well, I guess he's not dividing with his base. He's dividing with Trump. These guys, these are guys who bend the knee to Trump. But they were like, listen, a lot of them even said out loud, Trump's not going to be here forever. And when he's gone, we're going to need somebody. In fact, Mike Termont, we're going to need somebody to fill this vacuum when Trump leaves. And I believe that that Republicans are going to be so sick of this Trump anti-liberty stuff, but they don't want to join the Democrats, that maybe we can do kind of an anti-MAGA Republican thing. I wish them the best. I hope that it is successful. Now, all of the people that I mentioned have various issues. Vivek wants war with Mexico and involuntary conscription. And you've got Dave Smith with the mass deportations. Anybody who looks at what's happening in LA and says, I want the liberty movement to do that too. Like, I don't know where you're at.
Right.
But this, all these voices will act in a way, even if they do, you know, conservative neocon establishment things, will at least chip away at MAGA. And we will see this finally starting to move on. Trump, predictably, as usual, as with many incumbents, isn't going to win, you know, his midterms. And if he doesn't get the One Beautiful Bill Act, I don't know if he can do anything else at this point. He's just going to be – this is kind of a common cycle with presidents, right? They push through a big thing, expend all their capital doing it, and then that's the end. That's all, folks. They spend 3 years in office doing nothing.
Right.
And this is something I will say – I will go ahead and make that guess for MAGA. I think we may get the One Beautiful Bill passed because they're revising it. They're going to do some bribes, similar to the ACA. They have control of everything for now. So we will see, you know, we will see maybe that get passed. But I will say, as far as MAGA is a movement, I do think that somebody may take the mantle, but I think that I'm not going to like whoever takes the mantle. I can almost guarantee it. But at least they aren't going to be like Trumpian style politics anymore. I guess that's something we can look forward to.
Yeah, I think back some of their – I mean, their corals stay the same. It's the fellow travelers that I think are going to fall off, like the so-called libertarian nationalists, like the Austin Petersons, the Dave Smiths, the Vivek Ramaswamis. Are these people in 2028 still going to cling to the old MAGA message? Of course, I don't think so. I think they were there just for the votes, right? Even Dave Smith, like – I don't know how you do a 180 on that type of support, right? And maybe he's learned his lesson. So the core MAGA might stay the same. I think all the fellow travelers fall off. The question is that core MAGA going to be enough to keep that movement going? Because the other option is that it goes entirely off the rails, meaning I've always said Trump's an idiot, in my opinion. I don't think he's a particularly smart man. I don't think he's an intelligent man. I think he has a certain amount of charm. I think he has a certain connectivity to a certain group of people. And he's obviously a great salesman. But just X's and O's smart? No. There are people in that movement, though, that are scarier because they're intelligent. And they won't be. They won't make the dumb mistakes that Trump does. And they're not as populist as Trump, which means they'll stick to their guns when they have power. The first name that pops in mind is J.D. Vance. Like, that guy is not an idiot, right? I don't view him in the same way that I view Trump. So the question is, once Trump goes, is Vance going to have enough of that support, MAGA support, to make his own run as a MAGA? Or does he come out then and say, like, I was just kidding for those 4 years. I'm going back to 2016, Vance, when I thought Trump was an idiot and a danger to the country. I'm going back to that version of myself. I'm going back to Vance 1.0, so please elect me. To me, that's an open question right now, because it's impossible to keep all this hatred stitched together without the use of military force, in my opinion, without the heavy-handed use of coercion. How do you keep all this hate together? Eventually, it's got to turn on your own people, wouldn't you say, Hody?
Yeah. That this is something, and we're seeing it right now, that the attack dogs are out. This is not something new to the Republicans. The Democrats, obviously, like I said, from reading Original Sin, they are totally fine to attack their own people.
Sure.
But this is something that we are going to see with, like, the anti-war Republicans, that they believed, when you listen to, like, the Rescue the Republic rally, they believed they had taken the Republican Party back. You know, they believed that they won it over, and they did not. You know, and this is something that we kind of have to – they are going to be furious. They're going to be looking for somebody that who will represent them, or at least pretend to represent them enough to win an election. It's hard to double dip into these things. As much as we rag on the American people for being stupid, I do want to say there's a reason the paleo movement takes over the Libertarian Party every 30 years and not every 3 years, that people tend to remember when you stab them in the back, when you just sell them out for a bunch of votes. Right. And so, you know, the Libertarians here obviously backstabbed. We've been getting backstabbed, obviously sold out. And I think there's a lot of Libertarians that are just not for it. You know, Angela can walk around in certain liberty circles, but I mean, nobody serious is going to put her in anything ever again. You know, I mean, this is somebody who's thankfully, I don't have to say allegedly anymore because we have the report, but
right.
Her theft, you know, her misdirection of funds and her irresponsibility with the party is going to blow up, has blown up in their faces. And are there some people who will just
right.
don't want to believe they're wrong yet? Sure. But I think even they will kind of have to take a step back at some point. And
right.
how many times can you get hit in the face with evidence and deny it? Like, it's just at some point you're just going to be tired of lying for this person who has done nothing for you.
Right.
Like, you're just going to be like, okay, you know what? Maybe this Trump thing was a bad idea. I'm done now. I think Dave Smith got to this point. I know he's saying it's just because of Iran, but I believe even he has felt like he's taken too many hits. That after Ukraine, after big expenditures, after Doge flopped, after, you know, everything, to just be like, okay, well, that's it then. I was fine to put up with the one little bit of statism with the mass deportations, but I didn't sign up for the rest of that. And so I think there's going to be a lot of people like that that are sick of being stabbed in the back, want something different. Oddly enough, a J.D. Vance from 4 years ago, the guy who was still calling Trump a Nazi, by the way, 4 years ago, like, would actually unironically be a great guy for libertarians to coalesce around, for the, like, liberty Republicans to coalesce around. Unfortunately, he's destroyed his credibility. He's even said, my defense of Iran, of the attack on Iran, is because Trump is my best friend. Right? So it's like, oh no. So.
Well, the other thing that was evident, too, very quickly, was, once again, Trump displayed his willingness to throw anyone under the bus. So, not so much Vivek, because he kind of left on his own real quick.
Yeah.
But you saw what happened when Musk started criticizing the fact that they didn't enact all those Doge cuts. They had their little spat for a week. And Trump didn't take any high road there, you know, which would have been uncharacteristic, right? He started calling them weak and this and that. And this week with Tucker Carlson, he immediately went into the attack mode, saying, hey, this guy doesn't even have a real TV show anymore. Nobody watches him. Why would, you know, and then a day later, oh, Trump, Carlson called me and apologized. We're good again. He's a good broadcaster, this and that. So you could see that swing on the dime mentality that, like we've said it 100 times, nobody in this administration was selected for any reason other than they swore fealty and loyalty to Donald Trump. That was the number one requirement for every cabinet position. Termott even said that when they asked him to join the MAHA movement this year, the first question in the interview was, are you willing to pledge your loyalty to Donald Trump? To which he replied, no. And they were like, okay, thank you. Don't call us, we'll call you. So we know that that's the case. And now it's interesting to see that a lot of people in this movement now have their eyes open to the fact that Trump does not have your back. And he does not tolerate any criticism whatsoever. All right. We've had another interesting show tonight, Hody. I hope you enjoyed conversing with me as much as I've enjoyed conversing with you. And how much the people out there, hopefully you've enjoyed listening to us as we talk for you on this show. Thank you, everyone who participated in the chat. Thank you for joining us. Remember, like, share, subscribe to Grumblings Media. Grumblingsmedia.com. You can find us on X, YouTube, Facebook, Rumble. And until next week, once again, peace, everyone.